request, music from Gail Salmon and her song Ordinary Places. At about 11 minutes now after the hour on a Tuesday morning, and it's so good to be back with you guys. David Allen Punt is with us, and Dr. Don Clark, our resident biochemist, the only scientist we have on staff here at Broken Road Radio, is joining us from Garden Valley, Texas, where he studies science and reads scientific reports and publications, and then he raises grapes. And does a pretty good job at both of those things. You're already a wine award winner, aren't you?
Well, we are. Yeah. Yes, we got a award last year. Entered the first wine that we made.
Did you invent a new wine? Is that why they gave you an award?
No, it wasn't. A new wine. No. I mean, it's the wine type or the wine varietal was Blanc du Bois, which is a white. A white grape, and you can do a lot with that particular type of grape. It's pretty versatile, but just made a dry white wine, and it came out very nice.
You know, I see a lot of new names on wine that in the last year or so that I've never seen before. Are people inventing new wines, or are they just renaming old ones?
They are creating names because of there's a lot of. A lot of restrictions. If you use a varietal name, for example, then you have to put on your bottle where that particular varietal came from.
Okay.
So if you didn't grow it on your own estate, then you would have to say from Lido or from wherever.
Burgundy, or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that you were from...
I don't see the name Burgundy anywhere anymore. What's happened to Burgundy?
Well, I mean, it should be on French. The only place that would use that would be if it was a French wine made in Burgundy.
Okay.
And imported.
It used to be common, and I just don't see it anymore.
Well, there was a number of companies, the big box companies and the 5-gallon jug companies that would put the word Burgundy on the front of the label.
Okay.
And, yeah, there are laws against that sort of thing, and I'm curious about the penalties, Don. The labeling laws in this country are rather loose and free. Are there penalties if you call your stuff champagne, for example?
Well, they could tell you to relabel your product, recall your product, and relabel it. Which
who is they? Would a lawyer send you a cease and desist order?
No, the federal, well, I guess a lawyer probably would, but they would work for the TTB, the tobacco and...
Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms group.
Bureau.
Okay.
Now, they would either, they could team up with the state, and the state would say, oh, you've violated this particular regulation. Mm-hmm. Or the federal government could just do it itself.
Sorry, we're going to have to confiscate these bottles and we'll go have a party.
Mm-hmm. We'll drink them ourselves.
I've
never heard of anybody running afoul of that sort of thing, but if it got out that you were intentionally falsifying the stuff that went in your bottle, I think the bigger harm would be to your potential customer. I mean, they would say, what the heck is in here?
Yeah, exactly.
You would lose credibility. But that's always been my first line of defense in any kind of faux pas. I would say, well, I didn't know what I was doing. And it seems it's worked so far.
No,
in this business, that's not a defense. Yeah.
That's
why I'm not in the wine business.
It's just a drastic thing you say because you can't think of anything else to say.
Yeah. Don Clark, biochemist and a member of the board of Creation Moments. And we do typically talk about things scientific, and we talk about faith, and we talk about evolution, and we talk about young earth creationism in particular. And we've got an article today that I found, and this is kind of an odd one, Don. This is a source for an article I'd never run across before. It's called the World Economic Forum. And they do writings on a lot of topics, law and politics and economics and business and so forth. This one popped up, and it fascinated me because they're reporting on a recent scientific report from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is a pretty impressive title. That's where this study was published that intimates and says now there's scientific evidence to indicate that dinosaurs died out may have died out after this asteroid hit the Earth a long time ago, but they were on the decline for a long time before that, declining, in fact, for 50 million years. That's a pretty long time to decline, isn't it?
Well, of course, it takes it takes time for evolution to work, and so it takes time for these dinosaurs to stop evolving, which is what they claim happened over that 50, 60 million year period. It was the lack of specialization, that they claim at least, which helped to cause the decline of dinosaurs.
It sounds like saying, well, evolution didn't work.
Well, it stopped working for some reason.
Yeah.
Which is not logical. I mean, okay, no. if evolution worked before and everything is going fine and we've got these species differentiation, and then all of a sudden it stops or it slows down, you have to ask your question, you know, why?
Yeah.
Were things just so perfect that, you know, there was no pressure on these creatures, and so they just stopped evolving? Now, it's interesting in the article. I mean, there's not much of an article there, and even if you go to the referenced article, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, it's just an abstract. And so you would have to join the proceedings in order to get the full article, but you get the gist of what they're talking about.
It looked pretty technical to me. They used terms in that I'd never seen before. So,
and anyway, that's what they're basically saying is that, hey, the temperature started cooling down, and we know that dinosaurs like warm weather, and so. The dinosaurs stopped specializing as the temperatures were cooling down, and then all of a sudden, wham, you get this asteroid that hits the Earth, which we can talk about a little bit more, and the dinosaurs got wiped out.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. They're saying that millions and millions of years ago, there was climate change, and that it caused the dinosaurs to decline. In this day and age, they're saying, there's climate change, and it's causing us all to decline. There's disaster ahead for us. Shouldn't it be apparent that climate change just happens?
Oh, climate change has been happening for for thousands and thousands of years. Now, I won't go so far and say for millions of years, because I don't believe the Earth and the universe are millions and millions or billions of years old, as we've discussed many times on this program. But the interesting thing about what they're claiming, now, if the temperature was cooling down and there was climate change, then what you have on the dinosaurs is pressure. What you have on the animals is pressure, which under normal evolutionary thinking, you would say, hey, there's pressure. The species has to do something in order to survive. And what they're saying is just the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. They're saying there is pressure, the temperature is changing, and the dinosaurs stopped evolving. And it doesn't make any sense.
Well, and particularly because they're saying that was happening over millions of years, it would seem that if evolution works at all, it would do just fine with that much time to work in. I mean, then you could see all the changes, the incremental changes in species, and they had enough time to react. But that's not the way that's not their conclusion.
No, it's not their conclusion, and so you know, it's logically it doesn't hold together. And the most logical explanation of all of this, of course, is that, you know, there was a global flood that occurred, and a lot of dinosaurs, matter of fact, a lot of land, well, we know that all land mammals, all land animals got destroyed during the global flood.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after the global flood, then you had climate change. I mean, major climate change after that, which, of course, we call the Ice Age, followed the global flood, and then it was really cool on the Earth. But you know, we know, for example, that okay, Noah and his family, so eight people went through the flood in an ark, and they took with them two of every kind of animal, which meant that they would have taken two of every kind of dinosaur with them on the ark. Now, the dinosaurs didn't have to be adult dinosaurs, but they would have to have the ability to be fruitful and multiply, especially after the flood and after the ark landed and the animals and the people came off the ark almost a year afterwards. But every kind of dinosaur would have been on the ark. And that meant that after the flood, then the dinosaurs would have started to repopulate the Earth. And some of the things that we see, for example, is that we've got fossils of dinosaurs after what we would, the creationists would be after the flood, or after the dinosaurs were supposedly extinct after this meteor asteroid hit the Earth in the Yucatan Peninsula in you know, in Mexico. Supposedly that was the event that wiped out the dinosaurs.
Now there's a curious term that supposedly dates that, and maybe you can explain this to me. In the abstract, in the scientific paper, it talks about 66 Maya, capital M-Y-A. What does that mean?
Million years ago.
Strange that they would abbreviate that. Okay. Well, saved them a little ink on the paper, I guess. There's an interesting statement in that article. Let me read this sentence to you. It says, whether dinosaurs were in a long-term decline or whether they were reigning strong right up to their final disappearance at the Cretaceous-Paleogene mass extinction event at 66 million years ago has been debated for decades with no clear resolution. The dispute has continued unresolved because of a lack of statistical rigor and appropriate evolutionary framework. They're saying that they didn't apply evolutionist thinking to it and therefore could not resolve the problem. Meaning you better think like an evolutionist before they'll listen to you, I guess.
Yes, well, that's the problem. You come to the wrong conclusion if you don't have the right frame of mind. Mm-hmm. Or putting it another way, you can tell any story you want depending on the assumptions that you start with. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening here. And it's interesting about this particular Cretaceous Paleogene mass extinction. We talked about this in previous programs, and it's the KT boundary that is found in some of the Earth layers, and more importantly, it's found near Mexico and an area around Mexico. But if we look at the molten material, for example, or the fused silica that would result from such an impact, we find that it's not that far from the original crater, and so it wasn't a global event. So if it wasn't a global event, how did it wipe out all of the dinosaurs around the Earth? And of course, we do know of a global event that did wipe out the dinosaurs, except that those, as I previously described, being on the ark. And it was that global event that we should be looking at, and the evidence for it, and there's massive evidence for the global flood, and then interpreting things according to that. Now, did this impact crater cause some damage? Well, yeah, it was a pretty big crater. I mean, a pretty big meteor, for example, or asteroid that hit the Earth, and it left a pretty big crater, and it probably did cause a local, relatively local tsunami, but it, in comparison to whatever event or events caused the global flood, that tsunami would have been mild by any stretch of the imagination.
Could it have resulted in global climate change, just the impact of the meteor itself?
Well, not global, I don't think, because the you can look at the dust, for example, from from the impact, and you find out, well, okay, the dust kind of settled in a pretty localized area. Now, when I say pretty, it probably did it affect, you know, Mexico and Texas and maybe Louisiana. Not having gone back and looked at the original data on that, I don't know how far the dust cloud probably went, but it wasn't anything like what was happening, you know, at the time of the flood.
Still, we would agree in principle that dinosaurs came to essentially an end, except for those who may have survived on the ark, with a global climate change, but occasioned by the global flood. So the details of the story are not that much different. The age is the big difference.
Well, the age and what led up to the the dinosaur extinction. Now you can say, well, you know, dinosaurs being bigger animals, it certainly they were bigger, you know, before the flood, and they had plenty to eat before the flood because it was a more temperate climate, and it was, you know, one big mass of land, as we've talked about before. This, this
with a relatively land. Uniform climate north and south.
Right, exactly. And so they had plenty of vegetation to eat. There was not a shortage of vegetation. But after the flood, you know, it took a while to reestablish that vegetation. And after the flood, because we had warm oceans, you know, prior to the flood, and then you had the flood, and then you had all this volcanic activity as the land masses were breaking up, which was throwing dust into the air, so that would be blocking the sun. So the land would be cold and the waters would be warm, and you'd have this pump going on.
And volcanic activity at the same time, I would think.
Right, and which would be pumping water into the atmosphere, but then that would, you know, precipitate as snow on the land, and then we would have the ice age. Well, ice ages are not conducive for growing vegetation, and so it would be easy to see, for example, that there wouldn't be a whole lot of vegetation for a larger animal, for example, to be eating, and maybe they didn't, you know, last so long. Although we have legends, even as you know, we've got legends certainly in China about dinosaurs, and they celebrate it by on their Chinese New Year, for example. And we have legends that the knights in England would go out and slay dinosaurs. There were dinosaur slayers.
Or dragons. Yeah, there are those, the kind of a collective memory of such creatures. You got to figure, they weren't invented out of, you know, whole cloth sometime in the 17th century. These things go way back. These stories, these images of reptilian monsters.
Yeah, so the, a logical conclusion as to, well, how did the dinosaurs become extinct? Well, it was probably man who killed them off. You know, they were big, and if you were trying to farm, for example, they would interfere with farming if they were looking for something to eat.
How do you build a fence?
Yeah, they wouldn't. It'd be kind of difficult to keep them out. Like I said, we've had, you know, it's certainly from legends, kind of written stories about man interacting with dinosaurs from that regard.
You know, there's another element in this story that talks about the age of the dinosaurs declining because conditions changed on the Earth that were more favorable to mammals, you know, which is us. And if you believe in evolution, ultimately we came along and came to dominate the Earth through that natural process where the dinosaurs were simply at a disadvantage in all respects, and so died out slowly, and then we came to dominate the Earth. If you compress that time, though, that's kind of the same story. I mean, humans were pretty much in charge of the earth at the time of the flood, and according to the Bible, evil doesn't come from the animals; evil comes from people.
And well, that's right. But the oldest book in the Bible is Job, and in Job he describes, or God actually describes, because mm-hmm. God is asking Job, "Can you make the behemoth or the leviathan?" And so
what the implication here is, if dinosaurs persisted for a long time, and maybe it's thousands of years and not millions, but began to fade out as mammals, mainly man, took charge of the earth, took authority over the earth, there must have been a time when the two interacted and lived simultaneously.
Oh, that very much so. Mm-hmm. I mean, because dinosaurs were created on the sixth day, as man was created on the sixth day. Mm-hmm. And man lived with dinosaurs the whole time the dinosaurs were on the earth, unlike the story that evolution says, that dinosaurs, ceased to exist 65 million years ago.
So the Flintstones had it right.
The Flintstones had it right, so uh-huh. You can watch that cartoon and say this is how, except for the stone wheels and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
well, there was a pet dinosaur. There were dinosaurs that did the heavy lifting. They were harnessed. They worked in the quarries. Now that's silly, but the implication that man and dinosaurs coexisted seems to be well established.
Well, I would certainly agree with that, but of course you have many, many people in the scientific world that would be horrified by that statement.
Yeah.
That man and dinosaurs lived together and possibly even worked together. There's it could be that a lot of dinosaurs were shy of man because they were man hunted them. Mm-hmm. You'd have a lot of meat in some of these big dinosaurs, but not all dinosaurs were large. You had some pretty small ones as well, those would have been coexistent with man as well. And since a lot of them were reptilian like, they needed a warmer climate to really mm-hmm. do well. Which,
do we know if they were warm or cold-blooded, or are we just assuming cold-blooded because they look like reptiles?
Yeah, I think we were assuming cold-blooded because they look like reptiles. Mm-hmm. Of course, you had the behemoth, which is a furry elephant, if you will. Mm-hmm. That animal could exist in a colder climate, and we have a lot mm-hmm. of evidence that, they were in the same general area where the Ice Age was.
Yeah, and we know that man hunted them for food.
And man, and mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you got to ask yourself, okay, which story makes more sense? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the evolutionary story, and even today in our article, is what they're saying even logical? And you come to the conclusion that, hey, this doesn't even make sense mm-hmm. from a logic point of view. Because we're told in our science biology courses, for example, that it takes pressure for something to change.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in their article, are trying to say, well, the pressure was, the environment was getting colder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would have forced evolution, if you will, instead of stopping evolution. I don't think their story is that compelling. I mean, it is a story, and it is an explanation, but it's not that compelling. Mm-hmm. What's more compelling is what you find, of course, in Scripture, that says that there was a global flood, and the global flood affected all of creation, not just man's aspect in this creation.
And if you'd like to learn more about that, I would suggest a visit to the Creation Moments website. It's creationmoments.com. And there's a link on our website at Broken Road Radio. Just click on that. It'll take you there, and you'll discover lots of the science there. And I'm not talking just about Scripture and other biblical references, but science that says such is the case. The earth is young, and it was created, And there's a designer, and you learn a lot with a trip to Creation Moments. There are DVDs, and there are books, and there's blogs, and videos, even a YouTube channel. And I think you would, if you're interested in the topic at all, it's a good place to visit. CreationMoments.com is the website. Dr. Don on the board there. And Don, it was good today. Thank you for changing your schedule quickly. We appreciate that you reacted. We weren't going to be here today, and then all of a sudden we were. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, that was fine because I had previously heard that you had pointed out, so it wasn't a problem.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Now, next Tuesday, we'll be gone. That's the plan now. So we'll see you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Don.
See you, Don.
Take care. Bye-bye.